DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum, to a very special edition of this show. My name is Connor Dillon, and some of you may have heard that there's a certain European of German descent, as he's been described, actually as he describes himself, and he's floating above your head right now, or possibly beneath your feet right now, if you're on the other side of the earth opposite him. But many of you will not know how Alexander Gerst, a German astronaut, got up there in space in the first place. Well, this is the story of how Astro Alex did that. And believe it or not, it starts with a launch that happened in Berlin, Germany, at the Zeiss Planetarium. Or actually, it was kind of a couple of launches, as you'll find out in a minute here. And at first, it didn't involve real rockets so much as empty canisters of film.
So we are about to witness the launch of a three-stage rocket here just behind the planetarium. Now, this is not a real rocket. It looks like a film canister, if you still remember what a film canister is, with a white powder inside and some liquid about to be added to it. So that rocket was a dud. It was supposed to pop off in two or three stages. Okay, so I'm going to do this myself now. I'm going to put some... This is the soda... I'd forgotten how hard it was to get a film cap off. There we go. Okay, so we're putting a teaspoon of soda in here. Oop, yeah. 2 teaspoons of soda. And then the citric acid in powder form. That was just 1 teaspoon. Okay, close it and shake. Okay, and real quick. So you put the water in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and then I put the cap on. Okay, and then what do we flip it over? Then is that the trick? Okay, so it's going to be sitting on the cap. Okay, ready?
Yes.
Okay, oh, the reaction's starting. Let me get the cap on and now... That was fun.
Okay, so just to be clear, that science experiment involved 3 things. It's baking soda, which many of you will already have on the shelf of your kitchen, water, which I hope you have access to. I certainly hope you have that. And the final component is citric acid powder. It's a powder, and when you mix those 3 things together, they kind of bubble up. And again, this is an experiment that any of you listening can do safely yourselves. Just make sure that when you cap the whole thing, that the cap is not screwed on too tight. Or first of all, not screwed on at all, I should say. But more importantly, that the cap is not too tight, then it could explode and it could hurt you. But again, the cool thing about that experiment, as it was described to me there in Berlin, is that the chemical reaction is actually creating heat. As part of the process. And so in a way, that chemical reaction makes, you know, this stuff inside of a film canister kind of like a real rocket. And that is why these kids were there in the first place. That's why they're shooting stuff into the air. They were super excited for an upcoming real rocket launch. And of course, that was the launch of German astronaut Alexander Gerst.
You can probably hear the chatter around me here outside in Berlin at the Zeiss Planetarium. Actually, in German, it's called the Zeiss Golz Planetarium because it's big and it is really, really big. And we are here for the live event of Alexander Gerst's liftoff to the International Space Station. The German astronaut will be heading there for the second time, this time as commander of the International Space Station. That's the first time that a German has ever held that title, only the second time that a European has done it. So lots of kids here in Berlin super excited about it, and lots of great teachers who have taken the time to make sure that they can come see this event live. Okay, so your name is?
My name is Eric.
And Eric, how old are you?
I'm now 15 years old.
And why did you want to come out to this event today here in Berlin?
I think it's very interesting to see it. I've never seen something like this before, and my school promoted it, so I just thought, why not come here?
Do you feel proud that a German is going up to be the commander of the International Space Station?
Yes, I'm actually very proud, but I have to say that I don't really care about the nation. It's just great that a human is there in space.
I'm Friederike.
Okay, and Friederike, how old are you?
I'm 16 years old.
Why did you come to the planetarium to watch this event?
I think it's very interesting, and my school gave me the opportunity to watch it because I'm a very good student.
So basically your options were to stay in school today or come watch this, and you thought, I'm going to go watch it.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all for Alexander Guest?
No, not really. I'm excited to see it, but I'm not nervous. I trust on the spacecraft that he will arrive, probably.
So up to this point, I've been talking exclusively about Alexander Guest going up in this rocket. He's not the only one flying up in the rocket. He's one of three. And the other two are the cosmonaut, the Russian cosmonaut, Sergei Prokopyev. And he's also alongside an American woman. Her name is Serena Maria Anyon Chancellor. She herself is a medical specialist. Sergei was the commander of a Russian bomber prior to becoming a cosmonaut. So those are the two that are going to be flying alongside. Okay, a few minutes still until the launch of Alexander Guest. A good chance to stop for a minute and ask the question, who is this guy? Because a lot of the German kids around here, a lot of the adults will have seen all of these various reports in German on TV or heard them in the radio. Before coming to this event, they have a basic grasp of who this man is, where he came from, and how he got here, meaning to this point in his life. A lot of people outside of Germany have never even come across his name, even if you follow things that happen in space. So let's take a minute to talk about Alexander Guest, the man.
Alexander Guest is a German geophysicist and a European Space Agency astronaut. His second trip to the International Space Station will take him there for a total of just over 6 months, or 190 days. Halfway through that trip, at some point in August, he'll take over as commander of the ISS. That will make him the first German ever to do so, and just the second European. Before this launch, Guest had already spent 165 days in space. That was his first trip to the ISS back in 2014. Guest was born in 1976 in a small city in southern Germany of about 15,000 people. It's called Künzelsau, and nowadays he's obviously considered a pretty special guy down there. After graduating from an honors-level high school, he volunteered for the German Red Cross. That was a relatively common thing for young Germans to do in the 1990s, and it was an alternative for him, and many others, to serving in the German military. After his time with the Red Cross, he slung a backpack onto his shoulders and spent a year traveling around the world. That trip ultimately changed the course of his life. In one of the countries, New Zealand, he was hugely impressed by the volcanoes he saw. That led him to pursue, and obviously obtain, a bachelor's degree in geophysics from the University of Karlsruhe back home in Germany. After that, he went back to New Zealand, to Windy Wellington, to get his master's degree in geosciences. Then, Guest went even further south, as if he were magnetically drawn to the southern half of our planet, to Antarctica's most active volcano. His research on the eruption dynamics of Mount Erebus earned him a PhD from the University of Hamburg. There's a picture of Guest you can find online that shows him standing at the edge of that volcano's steaming crater, flanked by sensors and framed by the wide, desolate landscape of the Antarctic. Honestly, he looks like he could be standing on the moon of another planet. And looking back at that image, it's easy to feel like you're seeing the astronaut in him coming out. But Alex would say he got interested in space much, much earlier, back when he was just a little boy in the early 80s, spending time with his grandpa. His granddad was an amateur radio enthusiast, also called ham radio, and he was fond of showing Alex just how the equipment worked. One night, according to Alex, his grandpa aimed the radio equipment at the moon. Then, using it like a great big reflector, he exchanged radio signals with other parts of the Earth, bouncing them off the moon. This is known as moon bounce, and it forever changed the way Alex viewed objects in space. Even today, Guest maintains his own amateur radio call sign. And for all of you ham radio operators out there, Alexander Guest is at KF50NO. Again, that's KF50NO. Later, he would learn how to use the various sensors required to monitor volcanoes. And when those couldn't do what he needed them to do, he even invented some equipment of his own. That didn't go unnoticed, and along the way he earned a prestigious German Geosciences Award. Then, while he was still wrapped up in his research on the Antarctic, the European Space Agency put out a call for new astronauts. Gerst decided to apply, as did 8,000 others. Only 6 got through, and Gerst was one of them. He's the only German in that group. Looking back, it's an interesting and somewhat unusual career path. From geoscientist to astronaut, from 4,000 meters, about 13,000 feet above sea level at the southernmost point on our planet, to looking down on it all from 400 kilometers above. It also goes to show, and this is something many astronauts struggle to convey to school children around the world, many of whom want to know how they too can become an astronaut, that there is no one single path toward becoming one. There are many. All you can do is work hard, keep climbing, and follow your fire. And yes, aim for the moon.
Okay, so this puts us just before the launch, and just to be absolutely clear, Alexander Gerst's rocket was not about to take off from Berlin, Germany. No way, nine. There are way, way, way too many people in Berlin, 3.5 million to be exact. And if a rocket were to launch and fail and then crash immediately back into a populated area, into one of those beautiful old apartment buildings, and by the way, something similar did happen in China a few decades ago, well, that would cause an unacceptable loss of life. So no rocket launches in Berlin. So what Europe's space agency does do is it outsources that part of the operation to its partner. That's Russia's Roscosmos space agency. And they launch the astronauts from Kazakhstan from the Baikonur Cosmodrome. And that launch is what we are all about to see live on various screens set up all over the place from Berlin.
Der letzte Arm löst sich.
And that was the moment. That was when Alexander Gerst and his two companions blasted off to space toward the International Space Station, and ultimately, it would take them 2 days to reach it, which might not seem like a big deal, but if you have ever seen the inside of a Soyuz rocket, they've actually got a replica at the European Astronaut Center, and I was there about 2 months ago now and saw Alexander Gerst kind of wedge his way into one, sitting next to another guy who... both of them weren't wearing any astronaut suits or anything, and it was already very, very tight, very, very claustrophobic. So that is not a place I would want to spend 2 days, even if the Italian astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, she was also there at this live launch event. She said, you know, it's not so bad in there because you can actually open kind of another small chamber and sort of move around. Well, no, not for me. I think the inside of Soyuz sounds miserable. So while Gerst remains stuck in there, for now, this was kind of my cue to find out, you know, what's going to happen to him next. So I did that by speaking to Rüdiger Zeiner. He is the guy who trains astronauts at the European Space Agency. And my question for him was really, what would he do if I had to suddenly get ready to go up to the ISS? How would he get me ready to go?
From watching astronauts, you know, go into the space station for the first time again and again, what kinds of things would I be likely to do? Where would I bump my head or, I don't know, pull a shelf out and have all the tools fly around? What kind of mistakes do new astronauts make?
The first mistakes are always with getting around, simply not knowing how to gauge your speed, how to anchor yourself to structure. That's the first things that you see. And then as you get operational and as your potential motion sickness subsides, we would see you lose things, not know how to most efficiently work, because there's nowhere you can put things easily.
Okay, so I'd have to probably clip all my tools to my body? Is that the tactic?
Yeah, you would clip them, you would put them in a pouch.
Now, I've gotten seasick exactly one time in my life. Does that mean I'm more likely if I went up there to get really sick and feel nauseous?
The research that we've done so far shows us that there's no real connection between you getting motion sick on the ground and getting space sick on the space station. Actually, the same people have had space sickness on one of their space trips and nothing at all on the second or the third one. So there is really no good prediction for that. The only thing you can do if it hits you is keep your head in a stable position and move slowly such that your inner ear doesn't get as irritated as it could be.
Now, Alex Gerst told us that he likes to practice somersaults while brushing his teeth. He said that's one of his favorite activities. He was looking forward to that most. So that's the kind of thing that would make you seasick, I would guess.
That is something that, if you get space sick, is something you would definitely want to avoid. You keep your head stable and you move slowly.
You've mentioned that there were specific problems, I'll put them in quotes because these were not life-threatening situations, but that really drew your attention or that became interesting stories for you to tell. What problems have you seen?
One of the problems was actually on the ground in the development work for new hardware for the space station. When the engineers had developed an instrument and they wanted an astronaut and myself to look at it to give them feedback on how it could be operated. And the instrument had a part that was to be drawn out of the main body by the astronaut. What they had not thought about is that if you pull something heavy out in weightlessness and you're not anchored, you're actually pulling yourself toward the object because there's nothing to hold you back.
And so this is a case of a former astronaut seeing a problem right away that we engineers on Earth would never see.
Exactly. Because of the experience he had, he hit the nail on the head immediately. And then after some discussion, we found a way to anchor him and he could open the drawer. But that required really then some thought on the side of the engineer to see which place was safe to anchor yourself to without damaging the equipment.
Alexander Gerst will become commander of the space station in August. And I'm still, although I've researched this, I'm still not sure what that means. I'm still not sure exactly what differentiates the commander from the other five astronauts on the space station. And I guess what I'm really asking is, what are some specific situations where the commander really had to take control and became the commander of the space station?
One important component is that the commander has regular management conferences with the ground. So he has a stronger link with the planning community and with the strategic thinking on the ground and transmits that to the overall crew. The most important thing of the commandership in terms of what do you actually do is, and we've luckily not had that, is in a case of emergency, because then the commander takes control of what goes on.
There was one incident quite a few years back, I believe, during an EVA, during a spacewalk, where I think an Italian's spacesuit began filling with water, and it became dangerous, or potentially dangerous. Would that have been the commander who said, abort the spacewalk, come in now, it's done, let's get this guy back in? Is that his role?
That is something the commander could have done. That is, in the EVA situation, there is specialists on the ground immediately available. So he would probably still defer to their decision because they would have more data available than he has on board. So, but that would be one of the areas where he could have said, this goes too far, come back in.
You mentioned that when astronauts get back down to planet Earth, they get kind of wobbly. I mean, we've seen images of them sitting there and adjusting to gravity, but what are some of the more interesting details about how human bodies readjust to gravity?
The funnier ones are when they try to orient themselves, when they walk through doors and hit the frame, because their sense of coordination between movement and own body reaction has still not adapted to ground conditions. Or when trying to grab a glass of wine or a glass of water, it slips out of their hand because they can't coordinate the force properly to hold it against gravity because they haven't been used to do that for 6 months.
So if you take away anything there, maybe you take away the fact that you should not invite an astronaut to one of your dinner parties if they've just gotten back to Earth. They will stagger around, they're going to knock stuff down, they're going to bump into doors. And if you give them a wine glass, it's probably going to slip out of their hands and smash on the floor. So just terrible. And Alex, when you get back to Earth in December of this year, well, I'm going to go ahead and wait until 2019 to invite you to my house parties. But that also got me wondering, will anything about Alexander Gerst's body be permanently changed? I mean, we've seen these images. It takes them a while to get up. They get kind of wobbly and then they recover. But does anything happen up there in space that is irrevocable, that cannot be changed back here on Earth? And to find out more, I talked to Fritz de Jong of ESA's Space Medicine Office.
Alexander Gerst is going to be on the space station for nearly 190 days. Will any part of his body have changed permanently and irrevocably, something that he can't get back, that he had before?
You've probably heard about the fact that somehow, we still don't really know how it worked, but somehow several of the astronauts come back with a change in eyesight. Yeah? It has something to do with intracranial pressure, with the pressure on the eye nerve. Yeah? But it's a tough call because we see it with some astronauts, we don't see it with others. Sometimes we see it after a short-duration flight. And sometimes after a long duration flight, sometimes in men, sometimes in women. So we're still in really in the middle of finding that out. If you go back 5 years, the only thing we did as far as eyes was a standard little eye test on board the space station. Really, like you and me would go to the eye doctor and watch from 5 meters away. You know, let's see how small of a character you can read. That's what we did. And then a new eye doctor discovered, a young eye doctor discovered that, hey, there are actually some astronauts that come back with a change in eyesight. And they started to look better at the data, and especially they started to do a lot more pre-flight and post-flight testing and a lot more in-flight testing. We have seen astronauts that came back with a different eyesight, yeah, that did not come back to nominal.
And so it has worsened how? Are they nearsighted? Are they farsighted? What's the problem with their eyes?
That I cannot tell you. It's just okay. That let's say they talk about the flattening of the eyeball.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then depending on what your original sight was, it changes.
A recent study showed for the first time that that astronauts sustain a 1 degree increase in body temperature while they're up in microgravity situations. And that was news. That was new. What other clues do you have, or are you looking into in terms of body changes?
You're absolutely right. The topic of this 1 degree higher core body temperature was also to us a big surprise, and it's really significant. Yeah, and we tried to understand where it is coming from, and I would say even the medical doctors are not really sure if it is something they really have to be worried about, but we definitely want to have more data on that one.
I don't know if this falls under the rubric of medicine, but to me it seems like general well-being would also have to include some free time, some time for yourself, some time where you don't have the duties of running scientific experiments, you don't have the duties of telling your colleagues up on the ISS what they should or shouldn't be doing as commander. I guess my question is he going to have free time up there to relax and watch the World Cup?
Good question. Yeah, he definitely will. You know, we have 7 days a week also up there in the space station, and we in principle have a normal weekend. Five working days, normal weekend. They work damn hard. One of the tasks of the Space Medicine Office is to make sure that we have a good balance, right? A good balance in both directions. An astronaut that has nothing to do, he's not a happy astronaut, but an astronaut that has too much things to do is also not good. So we make sure we work within certain limits. So during the week, long days, then we get to the weekend. On Saturday morning, the whole morning, in principle, the whole team, the whole crew is working and cleaning the space station, and the rest of the day is used for sport and some private time with the family. And then on Sunday, we really try to keep the Sunday free. So, and that's also something that that our astronauts, including Alex and the guests, have indicated, you know, if at all possible, keep the complete Sunday free, starting with I can wake up whenever I like. Yeah, some like to wake up early, some like to wake up a little bit later. Yeah? And really only having the sport and nothing else. And this is not always possible. There are sometimes some experiments that really require attention. And if there's really no way, then we can allow to have them do something on a Sunday. But normally the Sundays are free, and that's really their free time.
You're talking about days, and now it occurs to me that they just lifted off from Kazakhstan, mm-hmm. and so they're on Kazakhstani time. Their bodies are anyway. Mm-hmm. What is a day? Whose time is it up on the International Space Station?
Yeah, so it's GMT time, yeah, and because you have 16 times sunset and sunrise every day, you know, you would get a little bit crazy, and that's the reason why we really use 24-hour day, 7-day week.
So kind of interesting to imagine the typical work week of an astronaut on the ISS, and also to hear that Alexander Gerst will be experiencing some permanent changes to his body, specifically to his eyes and his eyesight. But at least he will also be able to take some time off and watch the World Cup while he's up there on the space station, especially on Sundays when he has a lot of free time. And I say World Cup because in a press conference prior to going, Alex actually did say that he would be watching these games and, in fact, will very likely have brought up one of the official jerseys. There was a question about which jersey he was going to bring, and he wouldn't exactly answer that one. But it sounds like he will be enjoying some soccer while he's up on the space station. Well, I figured with Alex, you know, suffering all of these effects of spaceflight, there's something called pancake face, which is the redistribution of fluids in your body that happens as a result of microgravity, and it all kind of floats up into your face and makes your face fat. The space sickness that he's going through as well, losing your sense of up and down. You know, I figured I should do my part. I should suffer with Alexander Gerst and also maybe try to make myself just a little bit sick.
So I'm being strapped in as we speak to a 3G simulator because I kind of felt, well, if Alexander Gerst is going to go weightless up above us, that I might as well get a little bit nauseous myself out of empathy. And with that, I will conclude our broadcast for today and say thank you to everyone. Okay, here come the bars as I smash my microphone here. Thank you to everyone for listening in. This is Connor Dillon for a very special edition of Spectrum. Got to put my feet up right here. Wishing you all a wonderful week ahead and Alexander Gerst a wonderful 190 days up in outer space. Goodbye. I haven't done one of these things for like 25 years. Okay, there's my space sickness coming in. Not really, but maybe a little bit. Oh, Lord. Why would Alexander Gerst want to do this kind of stuff? I'm now wondering. Alex, buddy, I'm doing this for you. Only... I'm going through like 3Gs, I think. See my fat space pancake face. Oh. Oh. Woo. That was good.